in your face. Got a great guest on the line. Gretel Emerson joins us from the Refugee Advice and Casework Service in Sydney. They're the lead lawyer for their LGBTIQ plus safety team to talk about Bridge to Safety, which is a new legal service for queer refugees and asylum seekers. Gretel, welcome to 3CR.
Thanks so much, James.
It's a great initiative. It's a partnership with the Forcibly Displaced People Network. Tell us about Bridge to Safety.
Yeah, it's an amazing initiative. So Bridge to Safety will be providing legal advice and assistance to LGBTQIA plus refugees and asylum seekers to allow them to lodge an application for an offshore humanitarian visa and then receive targeted support to prioritise that application with the department through the existing humanitarian visa scheme. So the program's going to provide ongoing support as well after lodgement of the visa to make sure we can help queer refugees finalise the visa grant, complete the necessary steps like a health check or securing an exit permit, and then ensure they are set up with some settlement services once they arrive in Australia.
So people would be lodging their applications when they're still overseas?
Yeah, that's correct. It will be for people outside of Australia who haven't been able to reach Australia through another visa scheme already.
And when will it be up and running?
So it's actually already up and running. We've already lodged 2 applications and we're actively drafting more while we wait to work on the fundraising side of the project.
Wow. I mean, it's filling a huge gap, isn't it? I mean, there's no other service like it in Australia.
Exactly. Yeah, this is only the second project of its kind, second to Canada, which is why it's so essential, because it's finally addressing the large gap that has existed in this humanitarian visa space for refugees and asylum seekers for years. They've been needing this type of protection on the basis of their sexuality or gender identity, but haven't been able to access it through the existing streams before.
And what kind of barriers do people face? I imagine they're huge in countries where their lives are literally in danger.
Definitely. So because this humanitarian visa already exists and the policy already allows for the prioritisation of LGBTQIA plus refugees and asylum seekers, the barriers that exist mean that in practice it hasn't actually been accessible before, because the existing visa scheme relies on people being able to safely self-disclose their sexuality and their gender identity, or it relies on needing to be sponsored by immediate family or an Australian organisation. So one of the main barriers to accessing this humanitarian safety has been disclosure and self-identification, because seeking protection on the basis of your sexuality or gender identity involves disclosing a very intrinsic part of your self-identity, which is an inherently very personal thing to have to discuss. And that's made even more difficult when considering that this needs to be disclosed or discussed with an authority. So many LGBT people fear sharing that experience and in the past have been facing exclusions from humanitarian aid services or discrimination and family rejection and unsafe processes, which can and continue to block access to these resettlement pathways. So that's why through Bridge to Safety, queer refugees and asylum seekers will be able to self-identify to FDPN, who are going to be able to provide safe and community-led support as an LGBTQIA plus refugee-led organisation. So that will help make this disclosure and self-identification process a lot safer.
Because safety is a huge issue. In some countries, of course, people can literally face the death penalty for being queer.
Exactly. Criminalisation in a number of countries still exists, and even in countries where same-sex relationships are not criminalised, there may be a range of other laws that police or prohibit queer identities or gender-diverse identities.
You mentioned FDPN, Forcibly Displaced People Network, who you're in partnership with on Bridge to Safety. What can you tell us about them?
Yeah, Forcibly Displaced People Network, FDPN, are Australia's first LGBTQIA plus refugee-led organisation. They are a peak body. They advocate for the rights and dignity of queer displaced people, and they support queer refugees and asylum seekers by connecting them with lived experience, with government, with services and international decision makers. And they're working to change policies and build the networks that are needed in this humanitarian space for queer refugees.
Tell us about the backstory for the establishment of Bridge to Safety. I imagine it hasn't been easy getting this service up and running and getting funding and dealing with so much red tape.
Definitely. So FDPN have been advocating for this type of project for years. Bridge to Safety is the result of years of their advocacy when they've been having meetings with the department or meetings with policymakers about people that haven't been able to access this safety before. So after years of FDPN advocating, they were able to demonstrate both the significance of this project and then also develop a tangible way to actually fill the gap that's existed for so long. And so in doing so, they reached out to RACS to jump on board as the legal provider and the partner. And so that's why we're so thrilled to be partnering with them to collaborate together on this pathway. And now we're working together on fundraising to actually be able to deliver the project that is going to be so life-saving.
Wow, I imagine that's pretty challenging, the fundraising. Tell us more about that and some of the barriers that you faced.
Yeah, so the fundraising is going to be so crucial because this type of visa pathway that is going to be accessed for queer refugees does not cover the cost associated with actually being granted the visa. So we not only have the costs involved with delivering the project from both FDPN and from RACS, but then also the visa costs involve things like accessing a passport or a travel document, completing a health check, accessing an exit permit, which for example is upwards of $600 US at the moment, depending on the country. And then, of course, paying for things like flights to come to Australia, the costs involved with settling in Australia. So the fundraising need is really huge at the moment and so essential for us to not only do the work between the two organisations, but then actually get the people to Australia safely.
And I imagine if you're a queer asylum seeker, the cost would be massive in your own country to, you know, get that money up and running. But when you do the, you know, the conversion to Australian dollars and or US dollars, it's huge. Like, it's just insurmountable for folks. So that fundraising is so imperative. Otherwise, people won't get that bridge to safety and they'll be living in terribly unsafe conditions.
Definitely. And it's so crucial that we've at least gotten the go-ahead to be able to lodge the applications. It would be devastating if we can get the application and get the visa, but then not be able to follow through with actually making it to Australia because of the costs, which is why that part is so important.
So you've lodged two applications already. Without, you know, giving away any personal details, were those people already in holding countries or were they in their country of origin still?
Yeah, they were both outside of their country of origin and had been trying to access a pathway to come to Australia for a number of years. Even though they were outside of their country of origin, they weren't in a country that was any safer. And so we've been able to lodge the applications and get them notified to the department so that the processing part can start happening.
How long do people languish in, you know, other countries after they've left their country of origin trying to get to a safe place like Australia? What's the typical kind of wait period?
Look, it's years. It's upwards of 3 to 5 or even more years for people to be waiting for humanitarian pathways to come to Australia. And especially for queer refugees who have been able to get out of their country of origin to another country, that second country is often not much safer. And so they're still involved in years of persecution or criminalization because of their identity or because of who they love. That doesn't make it any easier while they continue waiting for some type of humanitarian pathway to open up to a safer country.
It's just mind-blowing, isn't it? And, you know, it's hard to imagine the hardship they must endure when they're not only in an unsafe place, but they're in an unsafe place that's foreign to them.
Definitely. And they often don't have access to things like support services or aid, or they might still continue facing societal discrimination and rejection or harm from authorities while they're waiting in that process for so long.
Are there any countries, I mean, there must be clearly some countries in particular that are especially unsafe, where there's a lot of interest for people who, you know, have escaped those countries, they're in holding countries and they want to come to Australia. I imagine there's quite a few countries that are like that. What are some of the ones that jump out?
Yeah, definitely. So the project will be focusing on people based in Asia and Pacific. Those are the regions where we are getting the most requests for assistance and that are in the most high demand for that type of assistance, because those regions often house countries where same-sex relationships are criminalised. So we've received a number of inquiries a week for the last couple of years from people in Asia or people in the Pacific. That for each of those inquiries, we've had to give them a stock standard response explaining the very limited options that are available to them. So it's very exciting to now be able to respond to these number of inquiries for people in those regions with some better news.
So those folks who are in Pacific nations, are they in holding countries and they've perhaps come from Asia? Is that a scenario that's common?
Yeah, most people to be able to apply for the visa would have already left their country of origin and are now in a second country, although that is limited to dependent on what country they've been able to get to. So a lot of the time it is just a neighbouring country to the one that they were in before.
And what are some of the countries in Asia that are especially problematic?
Look, the countries we see criminalisation being high is, for example, Pakistan or Afghanistan. A number of countries where same-sex relationships are criminalised or penalised, or where the laws of that country don't allow someone's gender identity to be expressed.
When you actually, you know, are able to assist more people, how much capacity will you have? Like, what would be your goal in terms of case numbers per year that you would be able to, you know, assist with?
We're hoping to be able to lodge as many applications as we can. It is just dependent on funding and what we can achieve within the 12 months of a year. For context, for people that are already onshore in Australia, RACs represent between 200 and 300 queer refugees that are already in Australia. And so hopefully we can match those numbers for people outside of Australia as well one day.
Tell us a bit more about RACs.
So RACS is the Refugee Advice and Casework Service. We are a non-profit legal centre and we provide free legal support for refugees and people seeking asylum. We provide trauma-informed legal help and advocate for fairer and more humane asylum policies. And since 2022, we've also operated a specialised LGBTQIA+ safety program, which assists hundreds of queer refugees and asylum seekers that are in Australia. And now through Bridge to Safety, we'll be able to extend that assistance to queer refugees outside of Australia.
If people want to assist you with your fundraising, donate, for example, how do they do that?
So we have a website set up that's accessible both through the RACS website or through the FDPN website to donate specifically to Bridge to Safety through our Raisely site.
Fantastic. And people can Google that and it comes up, yeah?
Yes, definitely.
Gretel Emerson from RACS, thank you so much for joining us today and chatting about Bridge to Safety.
Thanks so much, James.
3CR. In Your Face would like to thank Thorn Harbour Health for their sponsorship of this program. Thorn Harbour Health envisions a future where our LGBTIQ+ communities and people living with HIV are healthy and live safely with dignity and well-being. To find out more, search for Thorn Harbour Health online.